Hello and welcome, my friends. This is Pastor Butch Paul. I'm sitting in for Mel today. This is Financial Survival, and I hope you don't mind putting up with me for about 20 minutes, because after this first break, you'll be hearing from Melody and her guest, and I know that you're going to look forward to that. But if you bear with me for about 20 minutes, I'll do my best to fill in for Melody as best I know how. Maybe say something, encourage you or spark you to move and do something. I don't know. That's the idea. But, of course, don't forget to call Melody at 800-375-4188. 800-375-4188. Let's get right to the metals. Gold today, 1477.52. It's down $1.28. Silver did a little better, actually. Silver is up 17.17. It's up 10 cents. So that's a plus on the silver side. And folks, I keep saying this, 1480 roughly on gold. And a few months ago, it wasn't anywhere near that. So please understand, this is an investment that is going to continue going up and fluctuating some in the process, perhaps, but still going up. The Dow, 28,499.07, up 122. NASDAQ, 8914.20, up 26.97, I should say. S&P, 3220.89, up 15.66. 10-year yield, 1.92% plus 0.1%. And oil, 60.33, down 18 cents. So oil's still holding in the $58-$60 range and had been for a long time. But again, I strongly urge everyone that can to look at precious metals. Please. I mean, I'm not an expert on a lot of things, but I know what's done for me. I'm just saying that before getting anything else. If you haven't called Melody already and asked her what she thinks you can do to plan for your future and leave something for your children. And the Bible says that a wise man, a good man, leaves an inheritance for his children's children. To leave something even for your grandbabies. Why not call Melody and ask some questions, okay? Let's get into some news. Retail apocalypse. A record 9,300 stores closed across the U.S. in 2019. You know, it's hard to believe that another week and, 10 days or so, we'll be through another year. 2020. That seemed like a long ways away back in 2016 when Trump took office, didn't it? 2020 is almost here. This could be a very interesting and dangerous year. But anyway, a report found that more than 9,300 stores have closed or are closing across the United States in 2019, including locations operated by Payless, Gymboree, Fred's, Walgreens, Family Dollar, and many more. According to a report by CoreSight Research, which released its year-end report on the closing stores, 5,844 stores closed in 2018. Folks, that's huge. That was huge in 2018. In 2019, 9,302 stores were reported to have been shut down or were going to be shut down, which is a 59% increase over 2018. What does 2020 hold? I don't know. You say, well, that's going online sales. I'm sure that probably is. A lot of it, I'm sure, going for online sales. Many, many, many people are buying online instead of going to retail stores or brick-and-mortar stores, and I know that. But what I think about here, though, is the jobs that these stores created for somebody. I don't care if it's Payless shoe stores or Walgreens or who it is. People worked there. They were getting a paycheck. They were paying their bills, supporting their families. And those jobs are gone. Where did they go? I don't know where they went. I hope they all found decent jobs, at least with equal pay what they were making. But that's not the point. That's 9,300 stores closing. If they only had 10 employees each, you add it up. That's a huge, huge amount. And it's just a sad situation to realize that many people are just losing their jobs. That's all. No way to put it. There's no way to put it, folks. They're losing their jobs. And France is still in a mess. Angry French pensioners offers the world a warning. Now, listen to this. I've just got a couple paragraphs here, but I want to share this in my opinion, if you don't mind. When it comes to retirement, France is like other countries, only more so. Everything about its system is untenable. It's untenable that it has more. It has 42 separate public pension schemes, one for train drivers, another for opera singers, and so on. It's untenable that the French think they have a God-given right to retire at 62 or even earlier. And it's untenable that they tend to riot in the streets every time the government tries to confront these realities. If they choose a slightly different perspective, the French might actually have reason to celebrate. After all, like people across almost the whole world, they can expect to live longer. The only problem is that unless they also work longer, this means they'll need to draw their pensions for more years. Moreover, because of lower fertility in recent generations, not to mention folks murdering babies, fewer young people will be financing these pensions. As I said before, it's a Ponzi scheme. It always has been. You know, as long as you have other people's money to pay these things, you're going to work. But this is another point. When people, for a generation or two, or maybe longer, have been able to retire at age 50, and some do in France, 62 other ages, as here in America, they retire 62, 65 normally, although the retirement age has gone up. But once it happens for two or three generations, they expect it to be a guaranteed thing. And if you try to take away from them, they're going to throw a hissy fit. It's like allowing a child to eat all the candy they want, then all of a sudden change their mind and say you can't do that anymore. They're going to be upset. You've allowed it for so long, they just figured something they can do from now on, so they're going to be very upset when you withdraw those things from them. The same thing with in France. And folks, the same thing in America. When, not if, but when they start cutting back on Social Security, Medicaid, Medicare because they're running out of money, then you're going to see a hissy fit going on here. Now, if you don't live in the hills, don't know what a hissy fit is. That means people get very upset and they just lose it, so to speak. It's going to happen here. It has to. The same Ponzi scheme that's been going on in France is going on here. The people in France paid into the retirement just like you and I have. And the same thing going on in France is going to be going on here in other places. The Ponzi scheme must come to an end sooner or later. On the conservative end, I say conservative end, Americans have murdered 70 million babies. And they brought in hundreds of millions of illegals who don't work but still draw benefits. You stop and think. Ask yourself a question. How long can that go on? Obviously it can't and it won't. This isn't a scare tactic. It's just facing the facts. It can't go on forever. It's impossible. Impossible. Now this next article I think is interesting. It says South Korea rejects U.S. troop cost demands, talks in with that deal. The U.S. is asking South Korea to chip in some more money to pay for their troops over there. Now, my opinion is, if we're going to be there to protect somebody, they should pay all the costs. But that hasn't been the case for many, many years, because the nation has a vested interest in other nations for their benefits they offer the United States. So the taxpayer foots the bill for the troops to be there, so we can maintain the benefits for the people in this country in a lot of different ways, maybe imports, whatever, exports, but oil and other natural resources and gold we can get from other places. It's like the Middle East, we have a vested interest in the oil field, so we're never going to draw the troops out of there. We don't want to lose the oil. But in South Korea, it says 2 days of negotiation between the U.S. and North and South Korea on cost sharing of the U.S. military presence have ended in failure, and there are no more talks scheduled before the existing deal expires on December 31st. President Trump's last-minute demands for a massive increase could be shaping up to be a huge mistake, as South Korea was already paying more than most nations to do for U.S. troops, and had agreed to a more modest increase. Getting from 800 million per year to around 1 billion per year was one thing, but Trump's zero-hero demand for 5 billion per year angered many in South Korea. The U.S. didn't do a good job of justifying this unprecedented increase either, which administration officials arguing that South Korea is rich and therefore could afford it. With South Korea working on improved military ties to China and making peace overtures to North Korea, however, it isn't clear that what they could afford is even necessary. Now think about that, folks. Making peace overtures to North Korea and military ties to China. Think about that a minute. South Korea says that work will continue on a fair and reasonable agreement, while U.S. officials have refused all comment. This once again gives the impression that the U.S. is intractable on the matter, which is driving a lot of popular opposition. I don't know, but I think, yeah, if we're going to be there, they should definitely pay for the troops being there, period. Just like the U.N. should pay us to be in here in the United States, I think that they should disband the U.N. altogether. That's my opinion. Nonetheless, why do we as taxpayers have to foot the bill? Think about that. And that's what's happening. But South Korea could get to the point they don't care whether we're there or not, because, as you said, we're working military with China, and we're maybe getting a more peaceful relationship with North Korea. They may not need us anymore. That's something to think about. And we mentioned the other day about Boris Johnson and the Brexit deal, and it looks like it is actually going to happen. Boris Johnson Brexit deal clears first vote as pound slides. As was widely expected, given the Tories' massive majority in Parliament, Boris Johnson's Brexit withdrawal agreement has cleared the first procedural vote in Westminster, setting the stage for its eventual passage, which will lead the UK to exit the European Union on January 31st. The pound didn't react much to the news. Instead, it continued to trade near its lows of the session. The British currency is on track to see its worst weekly drop in 2 years as traders fear Johnson's insistence that he won't extend the Brexit transition period beyond the set date. Now, he set the date for next month, folks, January 31st. They've been trying for 3 or 4 years not to try to get out of there. I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen there. I certainly don't blame the English people for wanting their own country back. I don't. I really don't. I mean, the New World Order would love to have all nations linked together, and they have pretty much got it all done through a lot of different ways. But a nation without borders is not a nation. Think about that. And Russia is beginning to question our motives a little bit. They said, "You should not get closer to our borders." Russia deploys hypersonic missile fighters to Arctic. Russia deployed hypersonic missile fighters along the Arctic and Pacific coast to protect its maritime borders. Myriad M1G 31 supersonic interceptor jets have been outfitted with the KH-47 M2 Kinzhal Dagger, a nuclear-capable air-launched ballistic missile, and deployed to the Kola Peninsula and Kamchatka regions of the country, a powerful move that will send shockwaves through Washington as Russia is now prepared to take control of the Arctic. The air-launched hypersonic missiles is one of the most advanced weapons in the world. Even sophisticated air defense systems have difficulty defending against its Mach 10 to Mach 12 speed. Mach 10, Mach 12 speed. Mach 10 and Mach 12, folks, that's the speed of sound, you know, Mach 1. So this is Mach 10, Mach 12. Talk about moving along. But Russia has seen America move towards borders, and they're just set up to defend it. What's going to happen there? I don't know. It could be something very serious. It really and truly could be. But time will tell. Now, yesterday I may mention something, or Tuesday. Thursday, I'm sorry. This is Friday, isn't it? I made mention of something that's happening in Virginia. Folks, now this is working to be something very serious. Just if you can get online, you need to go online and just type in your search engine, "Troubles in Virginia for gun rights." This is looking very serious. And please understand, God forbid this will break out in bloodshed and gunfire. But if it does, it will not only affect this country in, we'll say, unthinkable ways, but it will affect you personally, financially. It's going to make prices skyrocket. It's going to cause unrest everywhere. And who knows the crackdowns that could come, especially now that other states, including Kentucky, North Carolina, and Georgia, are considering doing the same thing. But Psalms 9:17 says that all nations that forget God are turned into hell. Would you say another civil war could be hell? Thousands of cops, veterans, supporters pledged to join militia in Virginia to combat unconstitutional laws. Things are getting really bad in Virginia, but this group isn't going down without a fight. Monday morning, law enforcement today reported on how Tazewell County, Virginia, is crafting a militia to defend the Constitution in the state. And within hours, we were flooded with thousands of emails from people across the state, police officers, veterans, and patriotic Americans who said they are joining. And in a movement, and it's a movement that's gaining traction across the state. One man wrote, "I am a Vietnam vet, ex-police, retired, and behind you, your idea is 100%. Anything I can do, I would like help." One says, "I live in Franklin County, which voted down being a sanctuary city, being the council Democratic, and Moonshine County gives up giving guns is dumb. The South gave up their flag, their statues, now they want their guns. Sound like Hitler's Germany," and it goes on from there. It isn't looking good. But another article here that comes from Natural News, not, please, this is a financial program. And think about this on a financial basis. If this goes beyond talk and rhetoric, this will affect you. This will affect the stock market. This will affect your investments. If you don't protect yourself, you may not get another chance. This article is entitled, "You Have No Idea What's Coming. Virginia Dems to Unleash Martial Law Attack on Second Amendment Counties Using Roadblocks to Confiscate Firearms and Spark a Shooting War." Now, this really sounds like they're asking for this. I can't believe it, but it sounds like it. After passing extremely restricted anti-gun legislation in early 2020, which is coming up soon, Virginia has a plan to deploy roadblocks at both the county and state levels to confiscate firearms from law-abiding citizens at gunpoint, of course, as part of the deliberate effort to spark a shooting war with citizens, sources are now telling Natural News. Now, folks, I ain't got time, but Some might choose to dismiss such claims as speculation, but these sources are now say that Virginia has been chosen as the deliberate flashpoint to ignite the civil war that's being engineered by globalists. Their end game is to unleash a sufficient amount of violence to call for UN occupation of America and the overthrow of President Trump and the Republic. Such action will, of course, also result in an attempted nationwide confiscation of all firearms from private citizens, since all gun owners will be labeled domestic terrorists if they resist. Such language is already being used by Democratic legislatures in the state of Virginia. Folks, this is serious. And again, if you never heard the Dimitri Dudeman, look online for Dimitri Dudeman, D-U-D-U-M-E-N, a prophet from Romania, come over in the 80s, and prophesied this exact thing. He did. He prophesied the Civil War in America and UN troops coming in. Read it for yourself. I'm not saying the man is 100%. If he's a prophet, I see things coming about he talked about. Who knows? But this is already talking about it to the point that people are actually joining militias in certain counties to ready to fight this issue. And it will spread across country if it happens. Gun owners could become automatic terrorists. Prepare yourself for the future because it doesn't look too good. 800-375-4188. Folks, I'll see you next week. Hang on for Melody and her guest, and I'm sure you're going to enjoy it, but please take this seriously. Don't put it off. Talk to you soon.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as common sense voices of integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSETalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at DGScoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Melody Cederstrom. And yes, I am pleased to welcome back to the program James Corbett. And a little bit about James. As you know, he is the founder and editor of the Corbett Report. That was founded in 2007, and in 2012, he became the editorial writer for the International Forecaster. And of course, we know the International Forecaster was created by our good friend Bob Chapman. And you can visit James's website at thecorbettreport.com, thecorbettreport.com. And you can also request a complimentary copy of the International Forecaster by going to their website, theinternationalforecaster.com. Hello, James.
Hello, Melody.
It's good to have you back. I always enjoy our conversation. And tonight I want to remind the listeners that this segment of the program is pre-recorded, and it was pre-recorded on Wednesday, December 18th. It's going to air, we're airing right now for the first time, on Friday, December 20th. Now, why am I bringing this up and reminding the listeners? So, as we are recording this Wednesday evening, President Trump has just been impeached. For the third time in the nation's history, the House of Representatives voted to impeach a sitting president. They had a day-long debate on whether he violated his oath in pressuring Ukraine to damage a political opponent. He was impeached on two articles, and the first one was abuse of power, and the second was a vote that the president had obstructed Congress. By the time this program airs, there will be 2 days of constant analysis on this historical event. So my question is to you, what do you think will be the impact of this, if any, to the United States? And also, because you live in Japan, you have a little bit more worldly view and insight. How do you think this reflects to on the world stage, whether it be political or financial?
Yes. Well, thank you for setting that up. And yes, I think the only 2 cents that I can give here that will be of any use whatsoever is the 2 cents that I hold as a Canadian in Japan watching these events from halfway around the world. So I am not American. I have barely set foot in America twice ever in my life. So I'm not presuming to speak to Americans or tell them how they should feel about this event in their domestic politics. But I can provide the outside perspective to talk not so much about what this means domestically for Americans in America, but what it means for the United States Inc., aka Uncle Sam and the empire's projection around the world. And ultimately, from my perspective, this changes nothing fundamental. And we see that, I think, from all of the stories that are taking place around the world with regards to the U.S. and its projection of power around the globe, even as these impeachment hearings and all of this is going on. We have, for example, the situation between the U.S. and North Korea deteriorating further still. Pyongyang, for those who have not heard, has set a year-end ultimatum on their nuclear talks. Are they even talks anymore with the United States? Remember when this was all hyped as the greatest thing, and maybe Trump will get the Nobel Peace Prize for freeing North Korea or something like that? Well, if people haven't been watching, all of that has gone completely crumbled to into nothing, and now talks are at the point where Pyongyang is saying, well, you have until the end of the year to give us something, to give us an inch here, or we're going to go back to doing what we were doing, and that involves missile tests and nuclear weapons development. So essentially, we're back to square one with North Korea, unless something dramatic changes. Afghanistan. Well, there's some good news about the U.S. involvement in Afghanistan after the release of the Afghanistan papers, which I have a lot more to say about at CorbettReport.com. But after this big revelation, oh, who ever knew that the generals were lying about this, the state of what was happening in Afghanistan, all of this shocking bombshell revelatory material. Well, now word is coming that Defense Secretary Mark Esper is saying that they are planning, perhaps, maybe, although they've announced this a million times before, but this time maybe really for real, maybe withdrawing as much as 4,000 U.S. troops from Afghanistan. Yay! Except, well, the little asterisk we can place after that, the caveat, Defense Secretary Mark Esper is saying he wants to focus on competition with China. So draw down in Afghanistan so that they can build up in the Asia-Pacific against China. Yay? No, not really. Just business as usual. Maybe business is moving to a different location. You have all sorts of headlines like nuclear weapons get small boost in budget deal, because, of course, you might have heard there was a budget recently passed. The NDAA got passed because Team Coke and Team Pepsi can arm wrestle all they want in the fake phony impeachment Olympics or what have you. But when it comes down to what really matters, i.e. funding the military contractors, you better believe they're going to line up and fall in line. And that's exactly what happened with regards to giving the Trump administration slash Uncle Sam exactly what they wanted, with bigger budget, including funds for the Space Force, because we better militarize space while we're at it. And, oh yeah, nuclear weapons also getting a budget boost. We could go through story after story after story from the world perspective of U.S. Inc. on the global stage and show nothing whatsoever has changed between the handover between Obama and Trump, and nothing will change even if Trump were to be removed from office, which I don't think anyone is saying is going to be a likely possibility. This will, at best, quote-unquote, will go to the Senate and will be voted down. They're not going to remove Trump from office, but he has been impeached. Wow, world-shaking. Well, no, it is not world-shaking news. It hasn't changed anything in the course of global politics. Again, I'm not telling Americans what to think about this regard to their domestic politics and all of that. Fair enough. But just from the global stage, this changes nothing.
Well, I do agree with you, because it really, his whole presidency, any presidency, it doesn't change anything. Nothing ever changes. It doesn't seem it changes for the good anyway. And I did want to ask you about North Korea, and I wanted to ask you, you know, exactly what you talked about, the Afghanistan war, about how the U.S. administration lied about it. And I don't know, did you write a piece on that, or?
I did not. Since this is pre-recorded on Wednesday, it won't be out yet, but by the time people are listening to it, I guess it will be. I'm releasing a podcast episode about the Afghanistan papers, as people might have heard, the bombshell revelation by the Washington Post, basically showing how it is not a bombshell. It is not breaking news. It is not even, it's even actually worse than sort of a nothing burger. It's actually making people feel that this reveals anything of substance, when in fact it actually covers up the real truth of the Afghanistan war, which is not that it has been a failure and we don't have the right strategy and they didn't convince enough forces for long enough with enough money, which of course is the main narrative that's being taken away from this Afghanistan papers psyop. The real truth is that the Afghanistan invasion and occupation has been a stunning success, i.e. it has embroiled the United States, U.S. Inc., once again, in this 18-year-long and counting fiasco, which has accomplished many objectives for, the, of course, the military-industrial complex and its associated contractors, who, ka-ching, ka-ching, continue to see the funds flowing in from this this decades-long debacle, but also the opium trade, which, as people might remember, the Taliban almost eliminated in their year before of the U.S. invasion. Obviously, I don't think anyone wants to emulate what the Taliban was doing and the ways that they were doing it and the reasons, but at any rate, it showed that the poppy trade can, the poppy cultivation can be ended if there is a serious political will behind it. But lo and behold, U.S. and NATO come in, and year after year, record-setting poppy crops that are getting converted, obviously, into heroin and then shipped into the global markets. It's almost as if the deep state is facilitating that. Also, just surprise, surprise, oh, by the way, the USGS found several years after the invasion, they just discovered, hey, did you know there's actually $1 trillion worth or so of lithium in Afghanistan? Oh, who knew? And this extremely precious rare mineral is something that we need for all of this futuristic gadgets of iPhones and iPads and iGadgets and iFondle slabs of the future. So, hey, you know, hey, great. Win-win, right? So we get to take all of this. And also, it's blocked several key important pipeline deals and other things. Afghanistan would be a natural transport route out from Azerbaijan and places like that if we're going out towards Europe, if we want to connect the resource-rich area to Europe itself, which is hungry for those resources. Afghanistan would be a great place to put such, but we can block that square of the chessboard to make sure that the only U.S.-approved pipelines get approved, like Nord Stream 2, which should be coming online, but in fact is not going to be because the U.S. is now sanctioning all the players involved with that. So, once again, Afghanistan has been a stunning success for the real planners of this type of intervention, which is not the narrative you're going to get from this Afghanistan paper's quote-unquote revelation.
It seems like, when will people ever wake up or understand? I mean, when I get in trouble because I just try to talk about all the issues that you just mentioned, about trying to show that things are not changing. I mean, all we hear about is the great economy here in the United States. It's greatest in history. Well, our GDP is, what, 1.9%? I mean, and, you know, John Williams, you know how he reports his numbers. He goes on and, you know, he was interviewed lately, and he says all these numbers. He says we don't have sustainable moderate growth. And yet, all the signs are there. You have oil and gas exploration has plunged. Retail sales have been overstated. And it's just like, it just doesn't matter. The truth doesn't seem to matter. And and if you try to bring the truth, people get upset with you because then right away, you know, you're against this administration, at least here in the States.
Exactly right. Yeah, I believe it was Oscar Wilde, right, who said that if you're going to tell people the truth, you better say it in joking form or they'll kill you, something like that.
Lord.
Anyway, that's a very true and apt phrase because, yes, people generally don't want to hear the uncomfortable truths, especially when the lies are so much more palatable and are designed to be that. And even when it comes to something like the Afghanistan papers, oh, this is a big revelation, and oh, it goes against the military. No, this is internal military propaganda. These are interviews conducted with the very generals who were committing these war crimes and atrocities in Afghanistan. Of course, from their perspective, oh, this has been a failure because we didn't have enough money, we didn't have the right strategy, etc., etc. All we are hearing is, oh, the secret details of what the generals wanted the people who were interviewing them to know about Afghanistan. Do you think that's going to be the unvarnished truth? Of course it isn't. So I like to believe that people can see through this, but unfortunately, seeing through it actually does require effort, because if you are just going from the headlines and maybe you dip into a story here and there and read a few paragraphs, you just kind of get the narrative, oh, there was some big revelation of documents of some sort, and it tells something about Afghanistan, and you have to dig down to figure out what's actually going on. No, these were interviews that were conducted by an inspector general office that then were FOIA'd by the Washington Post, and they finally got these documents, and it's interviews essentially with the generals and other people who have been running the Afghan war for the last couple of decades and their gripes about how it wasn't going well for them. But again, treating this as if it's some sort of treasure trove. But because it's framed in that narrative, ooh, this is a leak, it's declassified, ooh, it's sexy, wow, this internal information they didn't want you to know, It frames it in a way that people will be content. And I see even a lot of the anti-war side going, yay, you know, great, this is a big blow to the warmongers. No, this is exactly what they want. They could dream of nothing better than putting out their internal propaganda as if it's some sort of, oh, classified information. Oh, we can't let the public know about this. Oh, oops, the public found out about it. Oh, now our deepest secrets have been revealed. It's these types of ploys that are the way that these lies can continue to perpetuate. And until we wake up to those tricks, and they're not very complicated tricks. I just explained to you the trick in the Afghanistan papers, and generally it's something quite that simple. It's just, these are classified documents. No, they're actually interviews. They're just internal government propaganda that's been released via FOIA process. This is not the internal secrets. There it is, in a nutshell. That's the trick. That's how it's played. But it does require at least a modicum of effort to discover that. You have to at least bother to scratch the veneer in order to see what's underneath. And unfortunately, I'm not even blaming people for this. Most people just don't have the time to scratch the veneer of every surface story that's presented to them. People have lives to live, and they're not going to sit there like I do, because this is what I do for a living. But I do sit there and I scratch the veneer and I see what's behind each story. But most people don't have time for that, and I sympathize with that. That's why outlets, and I'm not saying myself or your program, or I'll let listeners come to their own conclusions on that, but whatever outlets you find that do that veneer scratching and do valuable service in that, that's why we need to protect and foster and help those outlets, because we do not have time to do each and every one of us to do this on every story that we encounter. And unfortunately, the lies are well funded by an international media machine that has been constructed through billions and billions and billions of dollars over many decades now. And that's not going to just fall down and die. No, that's going to continue pumping along and pumping out the propaganda almost as fast, if not faster, than it can be debunked. So we're on the short-funded side, shall we say, of the truth. But at any rate, that's, I think, why this continues to have such sway over the public's mind.
I heard you mention the Washington Post a couple times. And so and there's other publications and so forth that produce these series of research and so forth. Are they really the enemy of the people?
Yes. Yes. Without hesitation. Yes. And I mentioned Washington Post specifically because they're the ones that got these Afghanistan papers. So I'm talking in that context. And they make a big deal about it, that they had to FOIA for these interview documents that were conducted again by the Inspector General Office, Special Inspector General on Afghanistan Reconstruction, or whatever the title of the office was. They did these interviews over a period of years. The Washington Post found out about them and they FOIA'd for them. At first they were denied, so they had to sue in federal court, not once but twice, to get these documents out. And that's part of the story. Oh, it's so sexy, they managed to pry these documents out of the government. And that's part of the mystique behind it. But you're exactly right. The Washington Post, these other outlets, are the enemy of the people. Washington Post, for people who don't know, newsflash, was bought out by Jeff Bezos a few years ago. It, literally, the billionaires are now buying up these media conglomerates. And, oh, who else is Bezos doing business with? Not only Amazon, of course, but the CIA and the Pentagon. In fact, they, of course, had a $600 million contract with the CIA not so many years ago. And recently they were bidding on a Pentagon contract that ultimately got sent off to Microsoft instead. So perhaps it's been speculated as a result of that, well, maybe Bezos Post is more likely to go after the Pentagon in some token way, like this Afghanistan papers nonsense.
You know what? It truly is. You can't make this stuff up. I mean, it's sad. People, it's almost like people really don't have a chance. I mean, we're so far gone and owned by the corporate elite and so forth. Anyway, we're heading into a break right now, ladies and gentlemen. Please stay tuned. We'll be right back after these messages.
Food prices. prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today. Today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and I'm here with my guest, James Corbett of The Corbett Report. Visit the website, thecorbettreport.com. Well, we've kind of taken a trip around the world today, and one of the things I'd like to ask you, James, is there was we know that the Saudi Aramco jumped 10% in its debut in Riyadh last week. I guess the public IPO, the Aramco's $1.88 trillion market cap, which just a day later topped $2 trillion, makes it the world's most valuable public company. But there was also discussions. The former chief of the CIA said he thought Saudi Arabia is gradually running out of money, aiming his comments at the country's sovereign wealth fund. What say you?
Yes, that is part of the reason why we're seeing this Aramco IPO. I mean, why would the Saudi government be selling off even a small stake in its most valuable holding and, well, at this point, the most valuable public company on the planet? Is precisely because they are a little bit cash-strapped, shall we say. So we get that from a number of different angles. For example, the Saudi second quarter budget deficit hit almost $9 billion, just shy of $9 billion. Because of increased spending on government stimulus programs, as well as decreasing revenue other than oil. And it's not projected to get any better. In fact, 2020 projections are now looking at a budget deficit of at least $50 billion, or 6.5% of the country's GDP. That's a pretty precarious situation for a country that has been awash in oil money for a very long time. And as a result of that oil money sloshing around the kingdom, the Saudi citizenry has become accustomed to the lifestyle that they are pampered with as a result of that. Of course, it isn't the lavish lifestyle of the Saudi royals who just parade around London in their golden cars and buy $450 million paintings and all the other nonsense that the Saudi royals get up to, obviously. But some of that, at least enough of that, trickles down to the Saudi citizens themselves, that they don't go and riot and throw the whole system over, or they haven't yet. And that has given rise to a system where the Saudi citizens are well taken care of. The people who have to do the real menial and low-wage labor are just imported from other places, and Saudis are, generally speaking, well taken care of. But as those latest numbers show, now almost $9 billion second quarter deficit because of government stimulus programs, government welfare programs, other things trying to maintain that net. And the worst part, of course, is that the long-term, well, worst I guess it depends on your perspective, but from the Saudi house, the House of Saud, the worst part is the long-term perspective for an oil kingdom is not looking good because, of course, we're moving into the post-carbon environment. And I've talked about that many times and what that really means, the technocratic agenda behind it. But obviously, at one level, it's going to be a hit in the pocketbook for the Saudis, who obviously rely so much on oil revenue. I don't really think that's going to change overnight, but at any rate, it seems to be a dwindling part of their long-term budgets, and as a result, they have to try to find other ways. So part of this Aramco IPO, at least what they're saying is, oh, this is going to fund the NEOM city in the desert that they're going to create out of nothing, and it's going to be this futuristic city of solar-powered everything and robotic dinosaurs and all this other crazy nonsense that they've talked about with regards to it. That is at least the idea of where this oil revenue is going to be shifted into, basically the technocratic vision of the future. And there, so Saudi will remain at the cutting edge and will have all sorts of tech investments and stuff. That hasn't gone so well so far, but at least that's the gloss that they're trying to put on this. So yes, long-term perspective, Saudi is staring at a very big and growing budget deficit that isn't looking like it's going to get any bit better anytime soon. And that's precisely why we're seeing something like the Aramco IPO.
I don't know how the petrodollar would be affected, if at all. I mean, as
right. Well, I think ultimately the plan is the ultimate plan, especially for in the context of technocracy, which, again, for listeners who have never heard about this, this was an actual economic slash social slash political movement that arose in the 1920s, 1930s, but has continued on under different guises and in different forms, and the ideology still lives on. The original technocrat vision was to ultimately base money itself on an energy resource, or on energy. Energy credits, essentially, were the money is going to be energy credits that will be issued by the government based on an allotted energy usage budget for the country, or actually for the North American continent. In the case of North America, it would be a continental technate that would be administered by technocrats who would look at all the energy inputs and outputs in the economy and decide, well, you know, the North American technate needs this much energy, so they would issue energy credits to each citizen. Now, ultimately, I don't know what form that's going to take, but I think the idea of actually backing the monetary system itself with energy credits, resources of some sort, is likely to be the way that things pan out in the future. And we're already starting to see that. I just posted up an edition of my Propaganda Watch video series where I was talking about the Bank of England releasing some documents and speeches about the future of finance and how it's pointing towards something like, oh, I don't know, maybe like a Libra-like quote-unquote cryptocurrency. And for people who don't know, that's, of course, the quote-unquote cryptocurrency, which isn't really a cryptocurrency at all, that's been propounded by Mark Zuckerberg. Facebook and all its big tech partners have climbed on board, although some of the partners have fallen out in recent weeks. But at any rate, this idea of creating some sort of stable coin that would be backed by some sort of capital, but would be tradable freely and around the world, and using platforms like Facebook and others to facilitate that. And this is going to be some sort of currency of the future. Well, even Mark Carney of the Bank of England was saying, you know, that might be a good idea for a currency of the future, or a reserve currency, because the dollar is under threat. And so we're starting to see this idea coming about. At the same time, we're seeing this bizarre pivot of all the central bankers towards saving the environment. Suddenly, central banking is about saving the environment from the climate emergency. And so we see Christine Lagarde, who's just been parachuted in from the IMF to the ECB. She's now saying that the European Central Bank is going to be concentrating more on climate finance. And we see Mark Carney of the Bank of England moving over to the United Nations, where he's going to be taking up a post about climate finance. And we see the finance ministers of the world agreeing on the Helsinki Accords about climate and finance, and how finance ministers around the world can work to do their part to help the planet, because that's what the bankers are all about, as we all know. Mm-hmm. No, this is the $90 trillion swindle that they're preparing, literally, as even Mark Carney was saying in his speech. It's projected to be $90 trillion worth of green energy infrastructure investment over the next decade. In the next 10 years,
$90 trillion?
I am not making that up. Trillion with a T. Go look it up. Even the Bank of England is talking about this. $90 trillion in the next decade.
Where's that $90 trillion coming from?
Very good question. And unfortunately for all of us, the answer to that might be something called the financialization of nature, which is a bizarre and ultimately scary concept where essentially natural resources are going to be converted into capital through a process of tokenization and distributed in the form of some sort of cryptocurrency. It's not going to be cryptocurrency. This is going to be a centrally administered blockchain digital currency, which is not a cryptocurrency, but of course that's the whole point of the Bitcoin PSYOP, where blockchain, Bitcoin, whatever, it's all the same, whatever, there's no difference. There's no devil in the details. There are very big devils in the details, and they're going to administer something. There's already examples of groups that are trying to do something like this, like the Earth Dollar. If you haven't looked it up, look it up. Earth Dollar, which explains that this is a blockchain-based currency that's going to be backed up by the combined resources of the World Heritage Sites. They're going to turn them into tokens that can then be traded, and you will be able to trade this through this currency. I need another term. Digital currency. That's what it's going to be. And that's really the vision of what's coming into view here. So Saudi Arabia is just one small part of that. The petrodollar system clearly is coming to an end in some form in this century, but how does that take place? And I think we're starting to see that with this changeover to the post-carbon economy and ultimately the backing of money itself via energy credits or resources or whatever scheme they come up with, which is essentially about the monopolization of the planet itself for the banksters' benefit.
You know, and I don't know which is more sad, the evil of these people or the people that are just... are just so gullible to fall for their shenanigans and accept this. It just baffles me.
I get what you're saying. I don't want to blame the victims for being victims.
No,
at least not
either. But I don't understand. I mean, I get the power of, you know, I mean, their propaganda. I mean, they have the access at their fingertips. And I get that, but I mean, some people have to wake up and see what's going on.
I think this boils down to an issue that is way beyond the sort of technical nature of the way this or that monetary system functions. And perhaps this is my fault. I haven't articulated this well enough in the past, and I am thinking about how to better articulate this in the future. But the point I want to make is that monetary reform is such a dry subject, and you're talking of you're talking about the Federal Reserve and all these financial terms that nobody's heard of, and whatever. I just want to go to the store and spend some money and get something in return. That's what it boils down to for the average person in the day to day. So they don't really think about the system. But monetary reform isn't about these technical details of this or that function. Essentially, monetary reform is about community. It is about what it means to live in community with other people and how we use technology, because you're going to use some form of technology, even if that technology is a piece of paper with something scribbled on it. That's still a technology in this sense of a way to facilitate a transaction in this community that we live in. And there is an implied community in every different style of monetary system that you have. And in the style that we currently think is the normal, well, this is just the way it's always been, hasn't it? Well, no, it hasn't. But how did it come into place? When we start to look at the system as it exists, it implies a community relation of, well, it's a trustless system, but actually there is a level of trust in the central bank, which is going to administer all of this for us, rather than you don't have to know the people you're transacting with or trust them in any way or care if you ever see them again. It doesn't matter. All you care about is that facilitating that transaction with that piece of paper for that thing. All right, fair enough. But you do need the central bank system in order to facilitate that, because who's going to issue the credit? Who's going to control the money supply? It's got to be someone, right? Well, might as well be the central bankers. Well, no, that's the implied part of this that we don't see in our day-to-day lives, so we never think about. But at the end of the day, it boils down to what kind of community do we have and what kind of community do we want to create? And in a system where we are detached completely from our neighbors and those around us, and we don't have to have anything at all to do with them other than, you know, actually, I'm going to say passing paper, but really it's just swiping cards these days, isn't it? That's the extent of our interaction with other people. Well, then you're going to get a system that's going to be bankster dominated. Yeah. In order to have true monetary reform that actually means something, you're going to have community. That is the card. Actually, that's the horse that should be pulling the cart. We usually try to think of it in the other way around. Put the cart before the horse and, hey, we'll create this currency and then people will come in and start using it and then we'll create this community around it. No, that's not how it works. You have to have a community before you can build a currency around it, because the currency is just the technology to enable transactions among people. It's nothing to do with the dry technical aspects of finance. It's everything to do with the people that you are interacting with, why you are interacting with them, the extent to which you actually want to know them. And I'm going to set that as a task for myself to try to better articulate that in the future, because that's where this is really boils down to. And we have been detached from our neighbors in a process that has been going on at least for half a century, maybe more now at this point. But the breaking of bonds between people so that you don't know your neighbors, you don't hang out in actual physical form with other people. You don't even sit out on the front porch these days and talk to your neighbors or anything like that. That would be weird. You wall yourself up in your room and you've got connection to everyone in the world through this magic box, but just don't actually talk to people. Don't get to know anyone in your community. Don't interact with them in any meaningful sense. Just hand them slips of paper now and then. Well, we have to change that before any sort of meaningful monetary reform can take place.
Well, you know, there always used to be a sales technique called the takeaway. So you take away that community, you take away that communication, and what do people want? So I guess that's kind of a way. I mean, everybody, it's just all propaganda, and we are the cattle that they, you know, lead down the chute and so forth. And I guess that's just, how does that relate to the amount of debt that's around the world? And we're not going to get to a chance to talk about, the global tax. Maybe we can say that for the next time. There's a lot of discussion about canceling debt. You have Elizabeth Warren. She wants to cancel $1.6 trillion in student loans. You even have one of Trump's administration senior student loan officials that resigns, calling for wholesale write-offs. Others are going a little bit further. It was never done by charity in past societies. It was just basically, it was practical to do it.
Right, yeah. Yeah, this is obviously an idea with a large degree of pedigree for those who don't know about the Jubilee and the canceling of debts that has gone on for thousands of years. So there is something to this idea. And the devil is in the details, and unfortunately our monetary system as it exists right now is constructed on debt. Money is debt in our system, and so canceling out, yeah, I'll believe it when I see it, and even then I think the way that it is done and whose benefit it ultimately comes down to is going to be up in the air. I don't think this is going to, I would love for this to be the great canceling of all debts and let's start from ground zero and everyone's on the same footing. I don't think that's what ultimately is on the table, and I don't think the solution will ever be come from the political heavens handed down on high from some presidential puppet. As we've talked about, nothing fundamental changes when Team Coke or Team Pepsi gets into power. So I hold my breath, but I'm not going to wait for this.
So I can't go out and use my credit card this weekend then. Well, that's all the time we have today. Thanks, folks, for joining us. Thank you, James, also for joining us. As always, we appreciate your views and insights. And we'll talk with you again in 2020. How about that? Listeners, thank you for tuning in. Don't forget to call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. We'll be back on Monday. And until then, have a great weekend. Be safe and God bless.